everyone. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. It is a giant table, isn't it? Nice to be here. It's nice to see Sean and some other people that I haven't seen for a while, Danny. It's great, hey, when you go around. Where do I start? I'm nervous, I guess. I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous for about 30 years. And when I came here, I felt nervous then too. And I really only wanted to stay sober for 14 days. I wanted to stay sober till my daughter's birthday. You know, that was about, wasn't even 2 weeks. And I didn't think I could do that. I didn't think that was a possibility. And I'm still here. So there you go. They used to call me Pizza Pat. I stopped telling that story, because it was kind of it became kind of a sad story, But when I take my cake, I don't take a cake, I take a pizza. And I put the candles in the bun, you know. And the reason I do that is, the reason I originally did it, I guess, was, you know, for my dad. Because my dad is also an alcoholic. And my dad was on Skid Row. And I really wanted him to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And a lot of the street people would tell him when I was taking my pizza, because I belonged to a meeting downtown and where a lot of the street people attended. And they all knew my dad, so they'd tell him, and I was hoping that he would come, but he never did come. But the reason I took it was because when one time my dad was arrested, and he had one phone call, and he was supposed to be calling me, but he ordered a pizza all dressed. And so I never wanted to be like that, you know, but I turned out to be exactly like that. And unfortunately, my dad died of alcoholism. I found him in an abandoned building in downtown Montreal. And very serious thing that we have, that we suffer from. And, you know, it's a hard one. It's hard, you know, if you're watching loved ones dying. And that's what we have to do sometimes. And I'm just grateful that, you know, my daughter and my grandchildren don't have to watch me dying anymore. My father was a bootlegger in downtown Montreal. And, you know, before he ended up on Skid Row, he was quite a man about town, and so I was brought up in a blind pig. My mother left when I was 9 years old, and my dad brought up myself and my younger brother and my younger sister. And living in a blind pig, it's an amazing place to be when you're a kid. It's scary, it's very scary, but it's also fun. We didn't have any bedtime, and you know, there was always something going on. The hookers were upstairs, and the cards were in the back room, and the drinking was in the parlor. And so we were never bored. But it was a scary place, too. And I left there when I was 13. I got out when I was 13, went and got my own place, and got a job, and I started working in the stock brokerage business when I was 13 years old, and worked in that business for 31 years, and I loved it, you know. When I was a kid, other kids were, you know, playing with dolls or whatever, and I was making stock charts, so I was a little weird as a kid. When I left home, I felt like it was the most exciting thing I had ever done in my life, and I was off to the great adventure. And I had a plan, you know, that I was going to fulfill, and, you know, I really was excited. And a lot of things, like my life became quite wonderful, really, you know, from where I was coming from. And I didn't really drink until I was 20 years old. So when I was 20 years old, I found out that I was pregnant and I wasn't married. And at that time, being pregnant and not being married was a big deal. And it wasn't a good deal. So I was at the office Christmas party, and I was drinking so I wouldn't have to think about it. And I didn't just have one drink. I had eight drinks, and I got feeling pretty good, you know. And, but, you know, the next day, you know, I already had changed the next morning from a person who was never going to drink to a person who, you know, was saying, well, next time I won't mix my drinks, you know. So, anyway, you know, I had my daughter and my daughter Lisa, and I sent away for my birth certificate so I could get her baptized. And they wrote me back and told me I didn't exist. And so, to make a long story short, I married this fellow who was a folk singer and a friend of mine in order to give my daughter a name. And we were married for 7 years. But during our marriage, I ended up having a baby that died of crib death at 23 days old. And that's when I started to drink alcoholically. From that moment, I just could not deal with the pain, and I could not deal with the emotional pain. And I couldn't talk to anybody. I couldn't cry. I couldn't express my emotions. So I drank. And that seemed to ease things. And I'm one of those people that went down fast. You know, I really went down fast. So I was drinking for a little while, and my husband decided to leave. We had tried all kinds of things to make the marriage work after the baby died, and we just couldn't, it seems. But we did move to suburbia, and we had always been living downtown. And we moved to Dorval, and living in Dorval, you know, I wasn't used to suburbia. I didn't feel like I fit in. I would look out the window and see how the other ladies were, and I tried to act that way and carry that book. And eventually I was inviting ladies over, and I became the local psychiatrist, you know. And I solved all their problems by giving them a drink. And then I had my famous Tupperware party, and at that party the Tupperware lady couldn't speak French, and all the ladies at my party were English. And the party went on for 3 days, and we sold a record amount of Tupperware. And, you know, that was the kind of things that, and it was shortly after that that my husband said, well, I'm leaving. And he ended up going back to the Maritimes. And so when he left, the next day I went and applied for a job back in the brokerage business, because I was trying to be a suburban housewife, and I was just drinking and drinking all the time. Things were getting worse all the time. And so I went and got a job at a stock brokerage firm as order controller. And first day on the job, in comes this guy, Rick, and he says to me, you know, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm okay now. And I thought, well, he's a nut, you know. But every day he would come into the wire room where I work, and he would tell me a little bit of his story, and he would tell me a joke. And, in spite of myself, I liked this fellow, you know. And I thought he was a nice guy. And I remember talking to him and saying to him, you know, I have a problem too, I think, and it's all the stress, you know, of this job, and I don't know, you know, I just can't seem to stop drinking. And he said, well, why don't you just quit? And I did, I quit my job, you know. And I went to this small brokerage firm, and it was so quiet there, you know, it drove me to drink, and I went to another place, and every week as I was going to these different firms, Rick was calling me, and he was saying, hi, how are you? Oh, fine. Good, I'll call you back next week. And then one week he phoned, and he said, hi, how are you? I said, oh, good. And he said, well, I need your help. Can you do me a big favor? And I said, well, what is it? He said, I have to speak at this AA meeting, and I need some moral support. I'd really appreciate it if you could come. And I said no at first, and then I said, okay, I'll go. And I went with him to this meeting that was at Bishop and St. Catherine, Tuesday, 7 o'clock. And he was the speaker. And I went to all the people at the meeting before it started, and I said, I'm not an alcoholic, you know, I'm helping that poor guy out. And anyway, you know, after the meeting, Rick spoke, and after the meeting, I saw the literature table there, and I was standing there, and Jack, this guy Jack, was there, and he said, would you like some literature? I said, well, I'm not an alcoholic, you know, but maybe some of my friends, I know a lot of people could use this. And so he made me a brown envelope to take home of literature for my friends. When I got home that night, I was drinking to pass out, and I opened up the envelope, and I pulled out one piece of literature, and it was called A Letter to a Woman Alcoholic. And I read that, and I knew I was an alcoholic, and I just knew I couldn't stop. You know. My daughter had become my mother, and I was a little girl, you know, and I had, I was paranoid, I was you know, full of fear, and I, you know, I had thought often about not drinking, but I couldn't stop. As soon as I just could not stop, and it was becoming harder and harder for me to get alcohol, and because, you know, I just couldn't afford it, and so, you know, it just, I was getting more and more in debt. I had all these window pane envelopes on my table, and I wasn't opening them. And, you know, it just was going on, and I was going down and down. And this day I went to work, and after work, everybody was going to St. James Pub. It was free booze. So I went with somebody's birthday or something, and you know, by 11 o'clock, all the ladies had gone home, and by midnight, all my people that I knew and worked directly with had gone home. And, you know, about 2 o'clock in the morning, there I was with the president and the vice president and a couple of other big shots. And I was telling them that they were running the company all wrong, and they should watch out for me because I knew who they were sleeping with and all kinds of pleasant things like that. And the vice president said, come on, Pat, I'll drive you home. And he had this baby blue Continental, and I threw up in it all the way to Dorval. And when I got to my house, I got out, and as I was walking up the pathway, it was like I saw myself from the outside, and I saw myself staggering up the walk, and I saw what was happening to me. And, you know, I knew where I was going. You know, I knew where I was going. And I went in, and my friend who was there said, your daughter's really sick. She has a temperature of 103. And my daughter was the only thing I had left in my life. And so I went and put towels in the bath and, you know, gave her some aspirin and tried to bring her temperature down. And I started to cry. You know. and I hadn't been able to cry since I was a wee kid. And I was beside her bed there sobbing, and I didn't believe in God or people or anything anymore. And I said that alcoholic prayer that a lot of people say. I said, if there's a God up there, you better do something, because I can't stand this anymore. And I fell asleep crying beside my daughter's bed. And when I woke up the next morning, my daughter was up, she was playing, it was like nothing had happened. And I just stood up and I went right to the phone and I called Rick. And I said, hi, it's me. And he said, you've got a problem? And, you know, I said, yeah, I need to talk to you. I need to meet you at 10:30 in Central Station for lunch. And he said, well, 10:30 is early, isn't it? And I said, if I don't go at 10:30, I'll probably drink. So I met him at 10:30, and he told me he would take me to a meeting that night, and he did. And we went to that meeting, and here was Jack, the man who had given me the literature, standing at the door. And he opened up his arms, and he said, welcome home, Pat. And he remembered my name. And I thought that was a miracle. And I hung around with Rick and Jack and this guy Frank. We called Jack the Godfather. And so Rick was my temporary sponsor. Somehow he got appointed to me. I don't know how, but he was. And I thought he was the president of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went everywhere with him. And, you know, it was a little different than it is today. You know, today we're very gentle with everybody. And in those days they weren't quite so gentle. And, you know, I had to sit in the front row and have front row sobriety, and they'd tell you to sit down, shut up, and listen. And, you know, I remember saying to Jack, you know what I think? And he said, when you're ready to think, we'll let you know. And, you know, they used to give you a dime wrapped up in a paper with their phone numbers on it, you know, and I had all the bottom of my purse was filled with these dimes with the phone numbers and wrapped them up in them and to call, you know, before you drank. And, you know, I'd say to Rick, you know, I don't think I'm going to go tonight. And, you know, he'd say, there's a gray car coming at 7:30. Get in it. And the gray car would come and I'd get in it. And after the meeting, he'd say, see that red car? Get in it. And the red car would take me home. And I didn't even know these people, you know. And they all had tape decks in there playing AA speakers. And, you know, it was amazing. And then I met this fellow, Roy Hyde, who looked like Mickey Rooney. And he was kind of a screamer. And he became my sponsor. And he used to take me... 12 on 12-step calls. And, you know, you don't hear a lot about that today, those 12-step calls. But he'd take me to these ladies' houses, and he'd say, it's like the cops. I'm the bad cop, and you're the good cop. I'm going to yell at them, and you just pat their hand. And we try and get these people to go to a meeting. And sometimes they would come to the meetings, you know. And a lot of these ladies asked me to be their sponsor. My first 12 sponsees drank. You know, I thought I was the worst sponsor in the world. And I remember saying to Roy, you know, why are we doing this? These ladies aren't getting sober, and I don't know what to do, you know. And I really, and he said, that's not why we're doing it. He said, you're sober, aren't you? That's why we're doing. Yeah. And it was a wonderful, wonderful way of learning Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. It was always about the big book, you know, whatever question you would ask, they would tell you the answers in here. And they'd show you the answers. They'd show you the answers. Right out of the book. And I remember hearing a speaker, you know, and he was talking about the spiritual side of the program. And he said, if you don't get that spiritual side of the program, that you're going to drink. And that scared me. And I talked to Jack, you know, I said, what's going to happen? And we were at McDonald's across the street from the meeting at Bishop in St. Catherine, and there was four or five of us in a booth there. And so they said, well, we'll send her up to see Belle. And they started talking like this as if I wasn't there, you know. And I said, I'm not going anywhere. And yeah, well, my wife will take her daughter. And I said, no, I'm not going, you know. Anyway, on Friday, I ended up being put on the bus and going up to see this lady, Belle. And, you know, this guy met me at the bus and drove me to this little house. And here was Belle. And she was a small little woman and funny hats and little purrs. And her story is in the book, Came to Believe, on page 13. And I state, she said, the only rule here is don't smoke in bed. So I was there from Friday night, Saturday. Now it's Sunday, and I haven't I haven't really asked her anything, talked to her. We went outside in the backyard, and we were going to weed the garden. Well, I was going to weed the garden while she sat there and watched me. I'm weeding the garden, and I asked her, you know, I said, I don't know what to do. I don't believe in God, and, you know, I don't know. I really don't know what to do. I'm afraid I'm going to drink. And she said, well, why don't you just pretend that you believe and pray and see if anything happens. You don't have anything to lose. And that's what I did. I went home that night and I prayed. And the miracle started to happen. And today I have a wonderful relationship with my own higher power. My daughter is 38 years old now. I have two grandchildren. And I have a really wonderful life. You know, it's not a rich life materially, but it's a rich life. It's a very rich life. And you know, I owe everything that I have and everything that I am to Alcoholics Anonymous, because the people who have taught me everything I know are here, from here. And, you know, I just feel that it's a grace that I have received, and I think grace is something that you receive that you don't deserve, and, you know, I've done the work, you know, I've done the steps, and I continue to do the steps, and they are the most important part of my life, because I know if I don't do that, I don't know what will happen, you know, and so I trust that if I do, you know, what is asked of me here, and follow this, what is said in the book, that my life will continue to be better and good. And I will, you know, I feel like I'm happy, joyous, and free, just like it says in that book. I'm going to close for now. You know, but I like to close with the thing that gave me this little bit of hope to think that maybe Alcoholics Anonymous might work for me. And it's the only thing I remember when Rick spoke, is what he said at the end of his talk. He said, I'm not as good as I want to be. I'm not as good as I can be. But I'm better than I was. Thanks very much, and God bless.